Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way after what I hope was a great weekend on your part. If you're in the Northeast, practically had some decent weather for a change. Doug Collins, the 12th Secretary of the VA, Veterans Affairs, with us at the bottom of the hour. Lawrence Jones in studio from Fox and Friends during the week. Fresh up 6 minutes ago. We were just talking on TV. We'll see if we can still pull it off on radio. Did you still have your A game? Did you hold anything back?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't hold anything back, but, you know, I can go for 30 more minutes in the game.
This right, and then time. You just run out of gas.
Yeah.
You got 30 minutes, and then you're done for the day? Right. All right, so before we get to Lawrence, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Blessed be the Lord, my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle.
Pope Leo warned that Jesus, quote, does not listen to the prayers of those who wage war.
Really? Did you read the Bible? It's nothing but war. Trump versus the Pope, a clash that crashed into the news cycle Sunday, which was clear to me to be inevitable.
Number two.
I was taken to the Aloft Dublin Pleasanton where he was staying. I don't remember what happened that night, but I know there was sexual contact because when I woke up in the morning, I could feel that there was.
This staffer blows up. Eric Swalwell on CNN, up in flames. The disaster who is the congressman accused of horrible sex crimes. Not only won't he be governor, he soon will not be a congressman. I'll explain.
Number one.
Oh, I don't care if they come back or not. If they don't come back, I'm fine. Their military is gone. Their missiles are largely depleted. The manufacturing capability for missiles and drones is largely defeated.
Test of wills. Trump flips the script, takes the straight with a blockade just in effect right now. I mean, any minute. What it means for the war in Iran, next stop with talks in Pakistan, should there be another round. So, Lawrence, big commitment, by the way. So, J.D. Vance travels 18 hours, sits for 21 hours, comes out, brief press conference, back for 18 hours. So they're going to have another round. I mean, it's a lot of hours.
It's a righteous cause, but it's never going to work. It's just never going to work. Can I explain something just for briefly? I hate the comparison of what happened in Venezuela, what we can do in Iran. And I'm going to tell you why. In Venezuela, we kept the regime. We got rid of Maduro, but we kept the regime in place. But someone was more moderate, they claim, but the president had the ability to negotiate with her, so we kept her in place. Everyone keeps saying, we're going to do the same thing that we did in Venezuela in Iran. You can't do that because they have a radical ideology. It's not like if you get rid of this regime and you put someone that's in there that's four ranks down, that suddenly they're going to make peace with the United States. You have to kill them all or they have to leave the country. So I see what the president is doing. It's a righteous cause. He's trying to get a deal done. But I think we're back to square one again, which is the president has depleted their military. The missile program is in trouble. The Navy is in trouble. But we're still on the 5-yard line, Brian.
Right. And I think on some level, the president might regret the ceasefire, because what happens is you look at the New York Times, you watch CNN, MS Now, and you think, wow, this is not working. They're doing well. And the Iranians feel as though they're in the driver's seat. How are you in the driver's seat if you have taken severe damage to your country, to your missile production, to your launchers, to your actually military personnel, to your individual leaders? Now, we lost 13 guys, 13 too many. I understand that. And our allies have been hit, but they've been fortified, and they're actually more determined than ever to stand by us. I'm talking about the Arab allies. Right. The in Gulf fact, states. They are pushing us to stick it through. So what the president's got to do, knowing munitions are an issue, I love that he sent those minesweepers into the Strait. While the talks are going on, he went into the Strait and picked up mines at the same time, then announces a blockade.
It's a complete alpha move. And can I just go back? I don't want to rush to your point that you made about the Gulf states saying that they want us to finish the job. You know why the Gulf states want us to finish the job? Because they realize they're not worried about in the next 3 years when you have a Donald Trump presidency. They understand yeah. that the threat can be controlled. But if you get another president in that's a Democrat who is lackadaisical, who is not strong when it comes to the military, the Iranians are going to come at them, the Gulf states, so hard, and the United States, and we're not going to have anything to do. Dude, we're going to be on our toes. On our heels.
Right. No doubt about it. Here's what the speaker, who we don't even, speaker of the parliament in Iran. And I don't know how much power this guy has, but it was interesting. I found out last night his best friend was Soleimani growing up.
Of course.
So Soleimani and he were growing up. He goes political. Soleimani goes terror. Soleimani gets killed. And this guy, Bagai, would have been killed. But Pakistan said, don't kill him. He's one of the few we can talk to. That's why he's alive. Here's what he said. Cut eight.
One should have not expected that we could have an agreement in a single session. I don't think anyone had such an expectation.
Well, yeah, I think he did. If you're in the middle of a war, I think you did.
Well, I want to, who else was on that list was the foreign minister. And he said this, in the intensive talks at the highest level in 47 years, Iran engaged with U.S. in good faith to end the war. But when we were just inches away, we encountered maximalism, shifting goalposts, and a blockade. So that's not what happened. You guys didn't want to give up the nukes.
Right.
You just didn't want to give them up. The materials for the news. And you wasted the vice president and the president's time so you guys could regroup. Just be honest about it.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. So they wanted, this is what they said. They wanted $40 billion worth of, or $70 billion worth of their funds unfrozen. Wrong administration. But if they said, we're not going to enrich, if they said the war's over, if they said the strait is open, you might hear about unfrozen funds, because we wouldn't have a problem with unfreezing right. funds that belong to you. If you say zero enrichment, our program will be done like the UAE. They enrich out of the country. They bring in the nuclear. That's all you need. See, I loved Anthony Blinken over the weekend with Fareed Zakaria, which is a good show. But, you know, they don't like Trump. But I don't think Fareed is less crazy hatred about Trump. But Blinken comes on as an expert. Hey, we had a great job. We did a great job with Obama, with the JCPOA. They ripped it up. And because they ripped it up, when I went back as Joe Biden, Secretary of State, I couldn't gain their trust. I go, wait a second. They, under the agreement, it would evaporate in 10 years. Done. Number two, under their agreement, they could still enrich to 3%. They're showing you if they're enriching at all, they are enriching to the max.
Brian,
and they don't have on-site inspections from
Blinken is making the same point. I don't know if you saw on CNBC, Pete Buttigieg makes the same point.
They're all on the same page.
And it's like, you morons, have you not seen that when we went to the site and visited the site, that the amount of uranium that they were enriching, you could get 5 to 7 nukes out of that. Also, they also told us that they didn't have missiles that could reach the United States or Europe. Okay? And then they fired one aiming at Diego Garcia. Could have reached there, but we took it out of the sky.
Right.
So these morons continue to believe the Iranians over our own intelligence community.
So I was on with Michael Rubin last night on One Nation, and here's what he said is brilliant about the blockade. Cut 19.
Donald Trump flipped the script on Iran. The only criticism I have of this move is it comes a month too late. The fact of the matter is, Iran needs to both export oil, But a lot of people forget it needs to import gasoline. And if it can't do either, if our blockade is directed towards that, then the Iranians can't pay their Revolutionary Guard. They can't pay the Iraqi militias or Hezbollah. They come in to shoot crowds in the street. But at the same time, if they can't get gasoline, they can't run their military vehicles or their small boats. So this is a very, very smart move on Donald Trump's part.
I partially agree. I partially disagree. I'm going to tell you why. So I agree in a sense of maybe the administration could have decided that they were going to block all of this to begin with. No ships coming in, no ships coming out. But when I pushed back on the administration initially on this, they reminded me that we're in a global market and they were trying to get the Chinese to negotiate on our behalf. They were trying to get Japan to help us out with the negotiate. That failed. So I think once the president realized that the Iranians were just going to hold it hostage and that he wasn't going to get any support from the Chinese or Japan, you're not going to ever get help from Russia. That's when he decided, okay, fine, nothing comes in. But you got to give peace a shot. And so as much as I want the president to have this maximum campaign initially come guns blazing, he's a strategic guy, and he wants to go down the steps of escalation.
So they look, I think, about 1,000 ballistic missiles left and about 100 launchers. And I was talking to General Keane last night, and he said the launchers are tough because some of them they're not even going to bring up because right. they think they're going to live another day.
Right.
Some of them, they're just masters at hiding. So that's going to be key. So it's going to be hard getting the last 100, but they've done a really good job since then. What I thought was so fascinating is the story over the weekend about the mosaic defense of Iran and their philosophy that in 2003, when Saddam was taken down in 26 days, the whole country, the whole government fell apart. Now, whatever happened, the insurgency was fueled more and more, it comes out, by Iran. So even though the Sunnis were upset by losing power and they never should have let go of the army, I don't want to relitigate that war. That's all true. But they lost their leader.
Yeah.
These guys lost their leader. But they, in 2008, put together this mosaic defense where all 31 provinces were trained to act individually. So hard to invade and finish them off as long as one province is remaining. And they said that they're not getting replenished. They're not getting any money. And they might be saying to themselves, okay, the communication is so poor that they're not communicating with each other to know how bad things are. And that's why they could suddenly see a collapse that then nobody sees coming.
Oh, they will collapse eventually, but we can't get our feet off the gas. Look, there's always, they designed it this way for a reason. They realized that you would eventually get an American president that would do the negotiations. I mean, the president's pretty savvy. He got a lot of the Muslim world to join in on this fight. That's never been done by an American president. And so they wanted to decentralize the power structure where one guy is not controlling everything. And I think that's what you're seeing right now. You got certain factions of the ROGC that's like, you know what? No, we don't want to deal. They don't care that it's a suicide mission. They believe in their documents. They believe them to be true. And if they're going to die doing it, they're right. okay with that.
But you know what I love? These guys like Bin Laden, oh, I'm going to die. I want to be a martyr. But they hide.
Of course
right?
they hide.
They hide in caves. They let everybody else die. Yeah, they have other people take an oath, and they wear the suicide vest, but not them. So I think that the president understands our munitions are not endless and boundless, but we're picking up the pace on that. And I think the president wants to do further damage. I remember Dennis Ross was just on here last week, and he said the way it's going right now, prior to the ceasefire, they will fall within 9 months.
Right.
Because afterwards, remember, the Iran that started had no water and a worthless currency. The sanctions were strangling them in their cradle. And now, if we do this, they're going to have no revenue coming in, starting in 40 minutes, no revenue coming in. And China is going to be told when they show up with their empty barges, you're not filling up here. You could come to our country.
Right.
You want to pay full price, go to Venezuela.
Right.
I'll give you the GPS coordinates. So this is going to be, well, this is where we could use some help from our allies.
We could use some help, but a lot of them probably aren't going to help us. And the question is, do the American public have the stomach for what needs to be done here? I understand. No one, we're not a country that targets civilians, but the people that are surrounding the water plants and all that are part of the regime.
Yeah.
And so you got to take that into consideration when the president selects his target. Give the people a fighting chance. And so you got to eliminate some things and rebuild from the ashes.
What I think is just amazing is Martha Raddatz's show was such an embarrassment yesterday on This Week with George Stephanopoulos, which he's never on. She actually had two New York Times, one PBS, one New York Times reporter, NPR, and one New York Times reporter. All they did is take turns saying negative things about the war. Like, what was the point of that panel? Have a conservative, have a liberal, and let them have at it. But what is the? They had a two-person panel. Then they had the regular panel, right, which was thank God for Kevin McCarthy. But all of it was skewed. And then you watch Margaret Brennan on Sunday just go after the congressman from Ohio, who's not even a big Trump guy.
Yeah, he's not even over intelligence anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, he was moved from the chairmanship.
Wouldn't let him finish his sentence.
Would not. And there's this, look, Brian, I don't have a problem with, the analysts and, reporters debating the military strategy and talk about decisions that the president has made.
But they don't touch the military strategy.
But they're not touching it at all. They want to say, on one hand, that the military has done well without giving the people that are in charge of the military and the president, who is the commander in chief, credit for that. Also, you would think that we're losing, actually. I mean, the way that they paint the Iranians is that they have us on the rope and they've gotten everything that they wanted. At the same time, they're giving them propaganda wins. For example, I repeat this point every single week, but I think it needs to be repeated because we have stupid people that continue to repeat this. Oil prices, gas prices. Look, I understand the American people that this is real for them. But the Iranian stated goal is that they wanted to put pressure on the president that he would cave based on making the oil prices high. And the media, that's all they talk about is the gas prices.
Suddenly.
Right.
Yeah. So, by the way, on the other side, India is rationing gas right now. China's got long gas lines. Pakistan's long. And Japan, I imagine, is just as bad. Because they get most of their oil from the Strait.
Of course.
Well, then
they'll step up.
Yeah, we'll open it up. And, France, I love that France is calling the president of Iran to say, do a deal. Well, fine. If it wasn't for France putting up Khomeini all those years ago in 1979 and then allowed him to get the momentum and put him on an Air France jet to land in Iran, we wouldn't have had this problem 47 years ago.
I'm afraid that NATO is dead right now. And Mark Thiessen talks about it Friday in his Substack. There are some NATO countries that have stepped up to the plate, so I don't think that they should be held accountable for this. But the relationship as a whole has been fractured.
And Lawrence, real quick, your Fox Nation special?
Yep. You got to catch it. Lawrence Jones, the revival, huge. What's happening in the country on the college campuses. You can go streaming right now.
All right. Say a prayer. Back in a moment.
Big guests, bold opinions, better information. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
So we're not going to talk about it in detail right now, but I'll tell you, Eric Swalwell, it's hard to have a worse weekend than he had. Because of the way his actions seem to have dictated, staffers are quitting, other staffers are suing, others are gulping up to San Francisco Chronicle, others sitting down with CNN. Just talk about what a horrible person this guy is. I mean, rape allegations, assault allegations, predatory allegations, pictures exist. Not only has he lost all of his support, like Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff, you have to wonder this. How much did they all know ahead of time? Are they really caught by surprise? I mean, this guy made his name not by legislation, not by being a hard worker, not by being a deep thinker, but by going after Donald Trump. He is the House version of Adam Schiff. Made their name going after Trump, making up all these lies, just like Gavin Newsom did. How ironic he gets caught trying to replace Gavin Newsom. We'll see where this goes, but nothing good for Eric Swalwell. We'll talk about that and how he's probably going to get expelled from Congress. Coming up next, one of the best in the business, Doug Collins, 12th Secretary of Veterans Affairs, right in studio.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back. Doug Collins, one of our all-time favorites, whether he's a congressman in the as a civilian or whether he's doing outnumbered before he goes stops by. Now he's the 12th Secretary of Veterans Affairs, former Congressman Doug Collins. Doug, great to see you.
Oh, it's good to be with you.
Well, Mr. Secretary, I should say.
Hey, as always, Doug, Brunt. Right. We're always good.
First off, there's so much going on in your old job, your new job in the country, but on the VA, what kind of progress are you making to shorten that backup list?
I think the best thing we've seen is it's amazing, Brian, when you unleash an organization to do what they're supposed to do and you give them a purpose. And we've talked about this before. When I first came in, you know, no matter how big this bureaucracy was, the one thing is everybody had a plan, but nobody had a plan. So we basically said, when I came in, I said, we're going to put veterans first at the VA, which means that everything we do is how do we help best veterans? So all the bureaucracy and all of the me-isms went away because said, okay, how can we help veterans? We're now, glad to report, when I was here last year, we had 260,000 in a backlog, 125 days or over. And over 1 million claims that were just sitting there basically just not going fast at all from the Biden administration. We're sitting here this morning and the backlog is now, under right around 85,000 and we're heading toward our all time low. We'll hit it by the summer. We got to go by July 4th to hit it under 60,000.
Which means they're waiting for medical care?
This is waiting to get even just into the system, get their disability claim, their initial pay. This is what was crazy, Brian. We were making folks who were just initially claiming, you know, what they've earned. They were waiting 4 months, 5 months, 6 months. We've narrowed that down now to 78 days. And if we get help from DOW, we're going to keep it even further.
Now, what about that rule that passed? It might have been Trump's first term. Gives people an opportunity to go to a doctor near them.
Yes.
If a VA facility isn't near them.
Yeah, we've actually put back in force the Mission Act. The Biden administration did away with it. They wanted to protect, and I'm going to be blunt, they wanted to protect the bureaucracy. They want to protect the union. They want to protect the bureaucracy.
Because you're dealing with unions.
All the time. And we're coming, but they wanted to protect the government worker. That was the whole thing. So, what they did was simply say, we're not going to follow the law. Is there, you know, make it hard to get out in the community. First thing we did was said, no, that's the law. We're going to do it. And we've actually now have a great partnership in which we're expanding our community care where we have best medical interest. I made that happen last year and our team came up with it so that the doctor and the patient can say, you know, it's better for me and my caregiver to go closer here. I'll still get some care here, but I'll get other care there. That's been a wonder. We're at about 46% of our business now is community care. So we still do a ton into it, but we also do a lot of community care. And that'll vary by area.
What is community care?
That's going to the doctor of your choice. That's going outside into the community. And that works the perfect balance. It gives us the, you know, there's, and what we're also finding though is this, is that sometimes the community is slower than what we can do. And the veteran is now seeing that. So there's a way that we can balance that. So if they wanted to go to the community, it was going to take 60 days in the community, which is a normal kind of thing. And it was going to take 30 days to get this procedure in the VA. They can now have the better choice to know which one's better.
Because you say, well, is it hard getting doctors? Is it hard getting nurses?
Yes. Right now, we still, if you're wanting a job and you're listening to this, if you're a doctor, nurse, in any specialty, please come see us. We're hiring and we've been hiring every day. And so, you know, we have a large workforce that does overturn. We got 450,000 roughly people. You know, we turn over more than most cabinet agencies actually have in their whole department every year. So
why
it's just normal attrition.
Because people want to go into the private sector
or retirements or, you know, it's just common. And also remember, we go everything from brain surgery to making up beds. So we're the most retail branch of the federal government as far as the cabinet goes.
Very interesting. And you just think as a country, we have a doctor shortage.
We do. And if you look at any, and we're still trying to find our way through rural medicine and some of the hospitals. But when it comes to doctors, radiologists in particular, anesthesiologists, all these kind of things, there's just a shortage. Everybody wants, you know, needs them in their systems. And, you know, they can actually pay better than we can.
And would it be better if Congress gave you an opportunity to give people raises?
Oh yeah, if they could raise the cap on that, that would help us out, especially on certain specialties. We could raise the cap to be able to attract more.
Is one of the things that they do, you recognize people that want to go to medical school, can't afford it, then you put them through medical school, but they're obligated to the VA system?
We have some benefits like that we can help pay off debts, those kind of things we go through. And again, can we probably expand that out better? Yeah, and look at it some more. I'm willing to do anything. Nurses, like I said, nurses, LPNs, all this stuff. It's endemic to the healthcare system. And this is one of the things that I think for me and for us to talk about is we have to understand the VA as part of the integrated healthcare system. We're the largest by far in the country, but we are still part of the healthcare system in this country. So what affects the public and private hospitals here in New York or in Iowa affect me as well. So if they're, if it's hard to keep nurses or they can't get doctors, I'm having the same and I'm competing with them.
So maybe Congress will be receptive there. So how's Dr. Neshwat doing?
They're doing great. She's working on some stuff at our, I think, our D.C. VAMC and helping out some other ways. So good stuff.
That's great. So right now you feel as though you were still staffing up last time I talked.
Oh, yeah. We're still hiring every day. And on areas of need, and this is what the lie that's told by, you know, some of the Democrats on the Hill is, you can't, you know, you're shortage. You can't do this. We're in a good place as far as where we are moving toward. But every day we need people. So we're hiring all the time. And our facilities are know that if they can need to hire somebody, they can hire them right now.
And we're talking with Secretary Collins. When a war starts again, mm-hmm. sadly, that increases your business, right? We lost 13 guys. There's been a few hundred wounded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 11 of those, I believe it's 11, have been buried in national cemeteries, which we run. The National Cemetery, as part of the VA. NCA is part of the VA. I think 11 of them have, we have had the privilege of laying them to rest. Our team, I put early on to our team because of the benefit side of that as well. DOW takes the lead, of course, in that, but we come in right behind. And I gave the instruction from minute one to say, break any barrier, do whatever we need to do. I want the closest working relationships we've ever had with DOW. And I get an update weekly on that. And so far it has worked out. It worked out very well. I'm very proud of our team.
At your old job, you were in Congress in 2015 when they passed the JCPOA. They tried to pass the JCPOA.
Yeah.
And it was just, it's basically it was not a ratified treaty or else Trump couldn't have ripped it up. Why was that, Doug?
Yeah.
Because it didn't get the 60 votes and couldn't pass the House, right?
No, yeah, well, we couldn't pass the House. Look, I've never been more proud of a no vote in my life on that. There was no reason for that. It was
people rewriting history and say those were the good old days.
Yeah. They also believe it was good old days when, you know, Biden was falling asleep in the White House too. But let's break this down very simply. Even President Obama and his people around him, they said that we're going to slow. Listen to their words. They said, "Well, we can slow the centrifuges." And then they would go on on the next side of their mouth, they'd say, we're going to stop the nuclear program. No, they never. Iran would have had a nuclear device
no
matter what. They had no percentages in there to keep them from it. And they didn't tell anybody that. And then they gave them money. That deal, I mean, we never enforced it. We never tried to enforce it. They had Soleimani and others who were flying to areas where they should have never been out of the country. This was part of it. This was a bad deal.
They were told not to leave. They were going to be sanctioned.
They were told, yeah.
They're visiting Russia.
Yeah, they were doing whatever they wanted to.
Where was he killed? In Iraq.
Yeah, exactly. Iran made the U.S. in that deal look bad. And now they're trying to recreate history. I'm sorry, recreate history for those of us who lived it? No, you can't do that.
So listen to, the year is 2015. The name is Chuck Schumer. Listen to the senator.
Under this agreement, Iran would receive at least $50 billion in the future and would undoubtedly use some of that money to create even more trouble in the Middle East and perhaps beyond. Current autocratic regime views this deal as a way to get relief from onerous sanctions while still retaining their designs on nuclear arms and regional hegemony. To me, the very real risk that Iran will not moderate and will instead use the agreement to pursue its nefarious goals is too great. Therefore, I will vote to disapprove the agreement.
Right.
Yep.
He sounds like Doug Collins.
Yeah.
Can you give him your script?
Okay, we don't want to bring this up too often. I actually agree with Chuck Schumer here, but I have a question. Where is that Chuck Schumer?
I don't know.
Because that Chuck Schumer was also the one that said we had to protect our borders. That's also the same Chuck Schumer that was said that we can't have illegals coming in. I mean, the Chuck Schumer you see today is just scared of AOC. And
right.
I think that's the problem. But that Chuck Schumer is exactly right. That was the sentiment in Congress at the time. I mean, among the president's own party. He knew it. He called it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why that's why the issue was such a bad deal.
Yeah, I just I find it pretty unusual. There's certain things going on. For example, the war itself. Senator Warner says, I don't even know why the president would blockade the Strait of Hormuz. Instead of saying, well, number one, ask him.
Yeah.
Number two is, why would you want to block? They're blocking it.
Yep.
So the president says, I'll blockade it. I'll decide who goes in and out. Instead of appreciating the strategy, Tim Kaine and Warner, who should know better, such veterans who get read in on all this intelligence, don't do it. I mean, don't say it. John McCain or you would not be saying that about a war when you agreed with the policy.
Yeah, I think, look, the biggest thing is, do any of us want to be in war? No, especially those of us who've been to war. We don't want to go back. We don't want to do this. But at a certain point in time, the president has set forth the agenda. He set forth the goals. For 47 years, Iran has been threatening us, killing our people. I served in Iraq where I saw on a regular nightly basis the results of Iran's IEDs and others that they were sending into Iraq. I saw this. And for years, we did nothing. And so now you come to the point in time in which we have this issue we're doing. And as the president said, we're going in for a short time. We're not going to send in nation building. That's not our part. They need to do that on. But we're also going to make sure they can't attack anybody else. And if they don't have a nuclear stockpile. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think what's not to like about that at this point? I mean, look, you can disagree in life with a lot of things. But just inflexively to say Donald Trump thought of it, I hate it, is not a policy. That's an ideology.
Eric Swalwell and the series of accusations swirling around him. He's already dropped out as governor. They're going to be examining whether he should stay in Congress.
Yeah. You know, for somebody that, I hate to see bad things happen to people. But, you know, again, also Eric Swalwell has been one that has been blasting accusations across the board for years. I've had to deal with him when I was in Congress. He and I came in the same time. I hope he just spends some time and gets his life together and gets his family straight, gets out of politics altogether, because this is not helping anybody.
Is it hard to believe the San Francisco Chronicle breaks this story, all these women coming out, staffers quitting, and is it hard to believe that nobody knew this when Speaker Pelosi endorses you and Adam Schiff, Dunboy? She got the who's who of California politics endorsing him.
Yeah, Kevin McCarthy called us out a few years ago. I mean, Kevin McCarthy was Speaker of the House. He said, you got to get him off the committee. He heard the same, and according to Kevin's story, it's the same time as Pelosi and he were in the room with the FBI briefing. And he said, how can you keep him on this? And right. So this has been going on for a while.
And by the way, it does seem like Democrats want him out. Cut 28.
If any of these allegations are true, he should no longer be a candidate, at least candidate for governor.
What he did is sick and disgusting. There need to be consequences to that. And I have said that not only does he need to step aside, but there needs to be House ethics investigation and law enforcement investigation.
This is clearly a pattern. I've already called for Congressman Swalwell to drop out of the gubernatorial race. And I think we have to hold everybody accountable.
So yeah. We'll see where this goes.
Yeah, I think it's, and look, I'm going to be upfront because accusations get thrown by the Democrats all the time and others. You know, look, he has a right to defend himself.
Yeah.
He has a right to go, and I want him to have that opportunity to defend. I mean, they need to look at this, but this is something, like I said, it's been going on a while. You made the comment about the reporters holding it. My question is, and this is sort of the curious question, is why now? You know, what about him being governor of California was such a problem out there that all of a sudden it came out? Now, if these accusations are true, then they do need to be investigated. They do need to be held accountable. That is not a negotiable. That does need to happen. But, you know, like I said, it was interesting as now reporters are coming out and saying, yeah, we knew this all along. Why would you recommend that you're not doing your job?
Right. I mean, by the way, if you're Eric Swalwell, you know you're able to live that ridiculous lifestyle and coast as a congressperson. Why would you bring on that scrutiny? Does he think people are just going to cover for him?
I don't. That's a definite question for him at this point.
Mr. Secretary, your reaction to, so you're about a year and a few months into this job.
Yep.
What needs to be done?
We need to finish up our reorganization, which we're taking and restructuring how our hospital system
operates. And you're leaner, right?
Well, we're leaner than we were. We're about 30,000 or so down from when I first started. And that was just reshaping our force. Okay. It was like having a football team with 16 quarterbacks. We didn't need 16 quarterbacks. We needed some of those quarterbacks to go play wide receiver or other. So we've reshaped our force. We're continuing to do that. We're seeing our wait times go down. We're putting, we've opened 34 new clinics. We've got more on the way. We are putting the times toward wait. We're doing a new scheduling system where actually veterans can now have the same kind of scheduling system that people in the private sector do on their phone, schedule multiple appointments. We never had that before. And the great thing is Biden administration gave up on health record management. I said last year, we're going to fix it. We're going to get it right. I told Congress I told the Senate when I first got confirmed, that's the first thing we're going to do. I'm so proud that I'm sitting here today that Michigan is going live today with four new sites. Mm-hmm. They are excited. I was there Friday with them. That is sites. We're going to have 13 by the end of the year and momentum to build more. That's what it takes when you just set a clear goal.
Right. And how's the president been with you?
I've been great. Great. Yeah. He told me, he said, just go take care of veterans. That's what I do. And I just say, sir, I got to take care of elections.
And who's going to happen in Georgia in the Senate race? Who do you think is going to emerge?
There's going to be an election. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think the Senate race right now, I mean, if you looked at the numbers, I mean, Mike Collins is leading. Still about 30-something days left there from the Republican side. And then it's going to be a dogfight to the end. Look, Ossoff has, you know, I think from political perspective, Ossoff's got to answer for, he's hid behind, he's done a wonderful 6 years of hiding. He's now got to be out in front of a voter again, really, for the first time to explain why he did what he did.
Right. And now the one thing is pretty clear. It's a red state.
Yeah.
Right? But you have two Democrats senators.
Republicans. Look, Georgia is going through that process right now of our Republican voters have to show up. They've gotten very happy over the years because we've stayed, you know, solid Republican in our legislatures, two governors, statewide. We lost a couple last year in specials. Our folks didn't show up. I mean, and look, all this talk about the 14th, Marjorie's old district where, you know, he won by 12 instead of 20. Yeah. Look, hardly ever do you have a non-incumbent win as much as the incumbent did. That's just a built-in fact. So all these reporters breathlessly talking about it, and I don't care how long MS Now actually starts drawing on the board, Kornacki, whatever. Yeah. You got to get into it. Now, are there things for us to be concerned about? Yeah. Affordability is an issue. The president is working every day to get our affordability and to keep us safe on the national stage. If we work affordability, we make sure that the people understand where we're heading, that they're safer, then I think that's where we need to be.
All right, Doug Collins. Mr. Secretary, the 12th Secretary of the Veterans Affairs. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's always good to be here.
Back in a moment.
The headlines, the stories behind them, and the people who make them. Only on the Brian Kilmeade Show. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Is this a just war?
No. Under Catholic teaching, this is not a just war. The Catholic faith teaches us there are certain prerequisites for a just war. You can't go for a variety of different aims. You have to have a focus aim, which is to restore justice and restore peace. That's it.
So that's similar to the ridiculous cuts by this cardinal and the Pope and everybody lining up against Trump. So you have to have an aim. How about this? Where was the Vatican when between 31 and 41,000 people were killed in cold blood? That's not an okay reason to go to war. That's just one of the many reasons to go to war. What about a threat of nuclear war on civilization? When they admit to you, I have 11 bombs, and nobody that I know doesn't think this is an extremist regime, a bunch of zealots who think about martyrdom more than they think of earthdom. This is all the elements, fundamental elements, to if you want to get justified war to have it. But if you're Donald Trump and you got to make sure the Pope and Cardinal, the Pope and Cardinal have to come out against you. Meanwhile, you kiss Joe Biden's butt while this guy is pro-abortion, fighting day and night, confusing gender confusion, all the things that the church evidently isn't for. But the Pope takes on Trump and the Trump takes on the Pope. Good luck with that. I still take Trump over the Pope any day.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, it's Brian Kilmeade. Hope you enjoyed the reprieve and good weather that we finally had. It makes it feel like spring in the Northeast. If you're in Arizona listening, you feel like you've been sizzling. And, of course, around the country, I think it was a pretty positive weekend weather-wise. Can't control anything else. Can't really control the weather, but you can comment on it. Congresswoman Maria Elvira Salazar is going to be with us. She's talking about a different way when it comes to immigration, the Dignity Act that Michael Lawler brought up last week. A couple weeks ago, we talked about on One Nation. Congressman Jody Arrington is going to be with us, the House Budget Committee chairperson. It looks like we're going to need a supplemental when it comes to this war budget. Will he be able to deliver? Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Blessed be the Lord, my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle.
Pope Leo warned that Jesus, quote, does not listen to the prayers of those who wage war.
All right. Of course, in the Battle of the Bulge, I'm sure the Pope is pulling for the Nazis or is going to be indifferent. Since when? Do you read the Bible? A little bit war-centric. I don't know if you've noticed. Trump versus the Pope, a clash that crashed into the news cycle. We'll discuss.
Number two.
I was taken to the Aloft Dublin Pleasanton where he was staying. I don't remember what happened that night, but I know there was sexual contact because when I woke up in the morning, I could feel that there was.
Up in flames, the disaster who is Eric Swalwell, accused of horrible sex crimes, and not only won't be governor, will soon not be a congressman. I'll explain that story and more in political news.
Number one.
Oh, I don't care if they come back or not. If they don't come back, I'm fine. Their military is gone. Their missiles are largely depleted. The manufacturing capability for missiles and drones is largely defeated.
That is true, but they still have 1,000 missiles left and about 100 launchers, and they got some seafaring mini boats that can create havoc in the Strait of Hormuz, which is now blocked. It's a test of wills. As of 2 minutes ago, the strait is blocked. It's no longer in the hands of Iran. They don't realize it yet, but they've already organized somewhat of a response, saying the president's bluffing, number one, and number two, threatening to shut down the Red Sea, probably through the Houthis. I'm not sure. Let's bring in Michael Allen, managing director of Beacon Global Strategies, former National Security Council senior director for President George W. Bush. Michael, good move with the blockade?
Great move with the blockade. I'm so glad that the United States is back to thinking creatively. The Iranians had a totally unacceptable leverage over not just the United States, but the entire world economy by way of being able to block the Strait of Hormuz. We made a strong counter move on Saturday with freedom of navigation operations, and then we followed that up by negating that Iranian leverage with us clarifying, well, first saying we're going to block the Straits of Hormuz, and now I think we've clarified it in an even better way, which is to say we're just blockading Iranian ports. So this is new economic pressure. It doesn't necessarily mean we're going back to war. So I'm excited by this, and I'm ready to see the Iranians sweat for a couple of weeks.
But so will China, so will Pakistan, so will Turkey, so will Japan. Anybody that depends on the Strait for energy, right?
Absolutely. And that's probably part of the plan. At the end of the day, if we want the Iranians to come anywhere close to something that the United States can accept, we need the Pakistanis, the Chinese, and others to weigh in with them and say, enough is enough. You're not going to be able to hold the Strait or interfere with the Strait in a material way going forward. You have the entire attention of the United States Navy. And I think eventually we'll have to get some situation out of them where they're not actively threatening tankers going through the Straits. So sure, there's still things that could go wrong here. A lot is in the implementation. It's a big risk for the military. But I thought it was a really strong move by the president.
So I love the minesweepers that went through, the ships that went through picking up mines while the talks were happening, with those 21-hour talks are happening. What signal does that say? Send.
I loved it. It was, we are holding out the threat of credible military force while we're talking to them, not just due to how many people we have in the region, but while we're talking to them, they're probably getting reports about the minesweepers, about the two destroyers that went through unimpeded through the Straits of Hormuz. So that eroded their leverage, that eroded their argument, not just theoretically, but in real time. I think it helped the vice president say convincingly, and these are the news accounts that have said that Vance was saying basically, listen, I'm walking out of here. And that was about the Strait of Hormuz. That was the basis upon which President Trump thought he was entering a ceasefire. And we were able to walk out without being too worried about it because the United States Navy is on station. They've done what they've needed to do over the last 5-6 weeks to set the theater, to move into an escort mission. And that's what we're about to be. And honestly, I'm relieved because to let the Iranians have leverage over us, more leverage than they've ever had since they had hostages in Tehran. This is a relief that we have a play here that we're going to run.
Absolutely. So I was talking to Vice Admiral Robert Horwood. As you know, he grew up in Tehran. They went over to CENTCOM, had a fantastic career. He did his research about what our Arab allies are saying. And I was really struck by this. Cut nine.
Everyone in the region is cheering how the vice president handled this negotiations where he gave them a shot. They didn't capitulate. We're done. All these states, UAE, Qatar, Saudi, Kuwait, they have an existential threat from Iran. And all the components of our demand indicate that. Developing a nuclear weapon, closing the Straits of Hormuz, missile programs, funding their surrogates, all those represent existential threats to them. So they don't want us to go through any negotiations unless all those conditions are met. And if not, they just reconstitute, and this presents that threat to them for a longer period of time.
Michael, there was about 72 strikes on energy facilities through the Gulf states. Yet still, they're saying to America, finish the job.
Amen. I think that is terrific. By the way, they're going to continue to get hit here. So they really want us to handle this once and for all, not necessarily regime change, although I think they would welcome it now. But we need to do this, frankly, to let the Gulf allies know that we're there for them. They didn't want us to do this operation. They asked if they could talk us out of it. We said no, we were bound.
But evidently, Saudi Arabia, well, MBS was pushing for it. Do you have something different?
Yeah, I think that privately, before it all, they said, be careful because it's our neighborhood. This is definitely more the case of the UAE, but I think Saudi as well. But once we were into it or committed, I think that's when Mohammed bin Salman said, well, you got to win. You just got to win, baby, win here. But in any event, what they want us to do is finish the job. It's their neighborhood. They're the ones that are taking the shots from the Iranians. And they need the United States to demonstrate that, yeah, we've got your back. That's the whole point of our presence in the region and our alliance. And I think this goes a long way to making good on American credibility.
I guess so. I was just struck by people like on intelligence who've been there for decades, like Mark Warner says, I don't understand what the point is of this blockade. He goes, I don't expect it to push Iran to do anything. Tim Kaine said something similar while heralding the JCPOA as a great deal under Obama that President Trump got himself into this mess by ripping up.
Yeah, these guys are just wrong. It may be that it seemed to me yesterday there was a little confusion at first. I think people heard blockade of the straits. And so everyone said to themselves, huh, why are we blockading everything? I think CENTCOM clarified it late last night and said, we're going to blockade Iranian ports. That makes much more sense. I liked either move, frankly, because it was ensuring that Iran couldn't, you know, make money off of this operation and tolls and who gets to go through and who's not. But I think they clarified it to Iranian ports and everyone else can get through. Now, that is the play. That is us reestablishing control of the straits, blockading the Iranians to put them in a less comfortable position when it comes to negotiations.
Do you think the ceasefire was a mistake?
I didn't love it at first because I thought we needed to retake the Strait of Hormuz on our own to negate the Iranian advantage. But if we're doing it now, then I think it's fine. It demonstrated that we're going the extra mile trying to engage in diplomacy with the regime. And I think it's as long as we're still committed to reopening the strait, we got to get to status quo ante on the strait. We can't have Iran with any new leverage. We degraded their military. We degraded their nuclear program. I think it's a success even without regime change as long as the Strait of Hormuz remains open.
Lastly, just on Cuba, the president sat down and meet the press yesterday. Diaz-Canel, who no one really has any respect for that I know of, said this about the chances of Trump putting him in jail. Cut 43.
We conduct very self-critical analysis and assessment of our reality, and we're trying to constantly transform and change what we do in order to improve what we do. But that's got nothing to do with the political system. It is not our political system that is embracing that inability to move forward Our political system is serving people, is serving social justice and making everyone advance. And it seems that it bothers other people around the world because of what it represents, because it is our system for ourselves, not that we want to impose our system on anyone else. And they try to block it like this.
So I don't know what he's trying to say. Communism's good. We always do analysis. If they did any analysis, it wouldn't have communism. Even communists don't want to say do communism anymore, except China, who has a degree of market economy in there.
Yeah, that was a bizarre statement, wasn't it? I mean, I know that they can probably blame the United States for their economy because of the embargo. And boy, I'm glad the embargo was on. But the rest of it was just sort of socialist nonsense. I mean, if we were able to practice socialism purely, it would be a huge success. I mean, man, are they out of touch with modern thought since at least 1989. So I think they were in trouble. I think their economy is nearly about to go under. And I think that's why the president, as a humanitarian gesture, let the Russian oil get into the island. But I think once we're wrapped up here in the Middle East, the president will turn his attention to Cuba and try and figure out, and maybe this is what Rubio is up to, trying to figure out how we get a better arrangement down there like we have in Venezuela. Won't be necessarily a democracy, and we won't necessarily be greeted with flowers, but, you know, we need a change there.
And lastly, I'm happy Viktor Orban lost. I think he's a sycophant to Russia. He gave his economy to China. He's flying the ointment on everything with to do with NATO and the EU. I'm done with that guy.
Totally. This guy is bad news. He's pro-Russian, as you say. Look, I've been a conservative all my life. I didn't really understand the conservative allure to Viktor Orban. I mean, I'm glad he's socially conservative. But look, he's wrecked their country. Hungary is a great nation and civilization, and they deserve to be led by someone who's going to help them and modernize them and grow their economy. And I think that's, I don't know much about the new guy, but I've read a little bit. I think they're on a better path. And frankly, I know we didn't need Russia to have such a great ally inside of the EU and NATO. So good outcome yesterday in Hungary.
Go get him. Michael Allen, thanks so much for the travel and the trip around the globe. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
It's always good solving the world's problems with you. Coming up next, your calls, 1-866-408-7669. Then we welcome in Congressman Salazar of Florida. You'll listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
From breaking news to big name guests, Brian brings you insight you won't hear anywhere else. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I have taken the position that we need to do whatever we can to get him out. Impeach him, invoke the 25th Amendment, push for him to resign, whatever it is, because this is so grave of a situation. It is the top thing on my constituents' minds during our town halls. It is the question I get asked no matter what airport I'm in.
Right. Let's try to impeach President Trump. I haven't heard of that before. And guess what? Even from a squad member, that's so unlike her. Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal. Let's get him out. He was elected, you clown, just like you're elected. He would love for you to quit, too, but doesn't waste any time talking about you because you don't like the fact that he confronted Iran as opposed to placated and pandered to Iran. John, listening on the Fox News Radio app out in California. Hey, John.
Brian. Good morning, Brian. Hey, I wanted to bring up a couple of points watching your show last night and this morning about the blockade.
Yep.
In 1988, I was part of Ernest Will operations where we were escorting the Navy, the tankers in. People were wondering, why didn't we do this earlier? He couldn't do it earlier. They had a very large military still intact, especially their Navy. You can't just be escorting tankers through when they had the size of the military, the missiles and the drones. They had to clear them out first. Second point I wanted to bring up, I've been using the VA since 2003 after I retired. Since Trump came in 2016 the first time and even today, my service has improved. I couldn't even tell you how much it's improved.
Oh, really? Access, good.
I'm sorry?
That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Trump is in. I have access. I live in a remote area in California, and I have access locally due to the community services that they provided under Trump. So I'm very happy with the VA, and I just wanted to bring up that point about the blockade.
Go get him, John. Thank you, and thanks. I appreciate the insight. Christine in Jacksonville, Florida. Christine.
Jacksonville. Oh, man, Gainesville, the Gators. Oh, that hurt. That hurt.
Okay.
I'm wondering if the Pope would like to move the Vatican to Tehran. I'm thinking they need a lot of work over there. He could do a lot of good in that area.
Do you believe he doubled and tripled down on the plane, saying, I'm not afraid of the Trump administration. I'm not a politician. I don't like the way they're using war and mixing with religion. Really? Oh, I'm wondering, what did the Pope say? I'm going to find out, surely. What did the Pope say about the 40,000 that were killed in cold blood by the Iranian government? Did they condemn it? Or they condemn a country looking to control the number one sponsor of terror? I mean, what planet is this guy on? Is he just another guy from Chicago who doesn't like Republicans?
That's what I'm wondering. The lady a minute ago who was talking about the terrible things that Trump was doing, was she talking about 9/11 or Trump? I'm trying to. Those terrible, terrible things. I think they're all talking about 9/11. Yeah, when they talk about the disgusting, terrible things.
Yeah, it would be nice. I mean, this is the last pope that recognized America being on the side of what's good and just was Pope John Paul. And together, along with Reagan, books have been written about it, movies have been done about it. They brought down communism. Besides that, I really don't know what good we've done, right? You listen to Brian Kilmeade Show. When we come back, Congresswoman Salazar joins us. Don't move. And then we'll have Chairman Jody Arrington of Texas.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Holy Father, can I ask you what your hopes are for the Middle East?
I'm praying for peace. I hope that ceasefire would be the most effective way to work together, to find peace for all parties, to respect all parties, and to come to a solution, which is too many years in creating problems for everyone. So
thank you.
Work for peace.
Pope Leo making it clear he is not for Donald Trump and doing it in the most subtle terms possible, but it's just no question about it. Going out of his way to criticize him, and Donald Trump with looks like two pages if you had to print it out on a Truth Social response, likes his brother better. Where were these guys during the pandemic when they were condemning and arresting priests for having mass? He also, if you go historically, go back to the Vatican. They never even took a position when Nazism and fascism was running rampant through Europe. Millions of Jews were being killed in cold blood. They stayed neutral. Why would you stay neutral with the Axis and allied powers? So the president's going at it with the Pope. And I'll tell you, he just reminds me of another guy from Chicago with an axe to grind against a Republican. That's exactly it. Meanwhile, joining us in studio, Congresswoman Salazar joins us out of the 27th District in Florida. Congresswoman, welcome. Great to see you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity of being here in front of you.
Yeah, I know in a few months you're going to be going up for election. Every seat seems like it's contested. So is yours, right? This is going to be
sure. I'm the only and basically the only swing district in the state of Florida.
Right.
The 27th district. But we are serving the community. So let's hope that we come back.
Are you worried about how the off-year elections have went for Republicans?
I'm very concerned about what's happening within the party with immigration, which is the main topic. Economy and immigration is the main topic for voters, and specifically for voters that are Hispanic.
So when we had Mike Lohr on 3 weeks ago on the Dignity Act.
Yes.
And we had him on with Michael Wilds, who's a fantastic immigration attorney, handled everyone from Melania Trump to John Lennon.
Correct.
In the past. So there's immigration, illegal immigration. We're all against it. There's building the wall, getting organized at the border. I'm all for it. As far as I know, most people are for it. But for the people that have been here for, let's say, a decade or 20 years, and they're meatpackers and they're farmers, and a lot of those people voted for Republicans.
Yes.
The question is, where does their path, when the border was open and maybe they were getting a message to come through?
Give me 1 minute. I'm just going to put this into context. We agree that immigration is broken, right? And we agree that the president said that the America First agenda needs to be established. Yes. We agree with that. And we agree that amnesty is a very big word that has many definitions. No one has been able to really define what's amnesty. For me, amnesty is what they have right now. Free schools, free roads, and free hospitals.
Right.
And that the only guy who can fix this mess, a 40-year mess, is Donald Trump. We agree with that, right?
So then, and the only way you could fix it is by first sealing the border.
And the border is right now secured because of Trump, that we have had a very strong mass deportation right now up to now, which is one of the three things that he promised. He never said he was going to deport every single illegal in this country. He said he was going to secure the border, he was going to kick out the bad hombres, and he was going to conduct the biggest mass deportation in history. He can do those three things with the Dignity Act. The Dignity Act, written by yours truly, is the only vehicle in the United States Congress that is bipartisan and that follows and mm-hmm. respects Trump's agenda. Period. Right. Those are the facts.
So are you saying for people that came here illegally over decades, didn't commit any crimes, pay a
fine? I'm talking about the people who have been here for more than 5 years.
5 years?
No Biden migrants. 5 years. People right. who have been, who do not have a criminal record.
Right.
People who have been working, may have American kids. The only thing we're going to give those people are the ability to stay and continue working in five important
sectors. Not
citizenship. I have no path to citizenship ever in the Dignity Act. And that is why I very much appreciate the fact that you're letting me clear the record, because some of my critics are saying whatever thing they want to say.
Because it's not amnesty. Because you're not giving citizenship.
What is amnesty? Right. Amnesty is what they have now. Free schools, free roads, free hospitals. Amnesty could also be that they're going to deport everybody. That is not what Trump said. Trump said he was going to secure the border. He was going to kick out the bad hombres, which are the criminals, that according to Holman, who's a good guy, Holman is a good guy, the head of ICE is a nice guy.
Right.
There are 600,000 criminals that you can go look for. So why don't we do that? But then the guy who has been in construction, hospitality, agricultural, healthcare, and manufacturing, long term, who does not have a criminal record, why don't we give him the dignity status?
Right.
That's it. No federal programs. He has to pay $7,000 in fines. He has to pay 1% of his salary over 7 years. No federal programs. And the only thing he's going to do is not get deported. Will never be American. Do you think Hispanics want to be Americans? Some of them may. I know that community better than anybody. So what I'm saying is, why don't we embrace them? We do not give them path to citizenship, but we let them stay and work in those five sectors that will help the average American guy, not the big business.
And I had a chance to talk to a lot of, I give speeches, and I was just in North Dakota speaking to a farmers union. And they were saying that,
In the practical,
they need they need the illegal immigrants that they had. They came here illegally. And they said that they know. And the thing is, would you add a sponsorship to it? For example, if you hired me 10 years ago and I came here illegal and I've been responsible, would you want to, if you're the farmer that hired me, would you sponsor me?
Listen, when you present to legislation, you go through committee. And I am more than willing to just work with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle. So we can get this out of the House and have Mike Johnson, whom I've spoken with, and he's a fantastic Speaker of the House many times. Mm-hmm. Let's put it up for voting. It will pass the House of Representatives for sure with Republicans and Democrats. It's going to get to the Senate. And I don't want it to get stuck like Save America Act is right now.
Right.
Because we do need 7 Democrat senators who will vote for dignity. You know why? Because they don't want to incur the wrath of the Hispanics
so
in their districts.
You realize the one worry that people have, for example, if there's a Democratic president next or in two elections or three, there will be one. And if they have the philosophy of Joe Biden, where come one, come all, you're allowed to come in, what is going to be in the law? There will be a violation of the law and not up for interpretation.
And you are absolutely right on the money, because if we do not codify, meaning put into law, not executive order, which is what's happening right
asylum
now.
Asylum rules.
The what?
The asylum rules, too.
Oh, no, yeah. Catch and release. All that is indignity. I'm just talking about the headlines, which are the illegals. But we do know, and I want everyone to understand, I think you just you were right on the money, that if we do not codify border security and enforcement into law, if we have Biden number two or Biden number three, that we lose the country. Because I want you to know that Hispanics want order. Hispanics want to stay here. They want a dignified life in the promised land. They do not want path to citizenship. Let me say this. The one who created this path to citizenship was Nancy Pelosi, because she wanted to make the Hispanics Americans or have a voting card so they could vote for them. Democrats have played political football for 35 years with my community. That's why I'm presenting the only vehicle to the Republicans.
So
Trump is the only one who can do it.
So, Congresswoman Maria Elvira Salazar is with us right now. So, have you shut off the magnet? For example, you're handling what the situation is here. But how do we stop the next wave of illegal immigration that's going to ask for some sort of extended work visa?
Brian, dignity locks and secures the border forever, because we have the BBB, where we have allotted $150 billion to ICE and for CBP. So if we codify that into law, that means that the next president needs to secure the border and make CBP do their job.
Wow. Okay.
Period. That's indignity. Otherwise, this is just temporary. So, and at the same time, we're embracing the Hispanics back to the GOP.
So a lot of people in battleground districts, yes, like Michael Lawan, like yourself,
yes,
are open to this. But what about Democrats?
We have almost 100 Democrats that are willing to vote for this, because, look, it's impossible if we, the Republicans, put together a bill like this one on the floor for any Democrats with Hispanics. Supposedly, you know, Hispanics belong to the Democrats. Not anymore, because right now we're going to be demonstrating to the Dems that we are not such a bunch of racists, that we're giving them dignity, not citizenship.
Right.
All right. So the Dems will think about it in the House and in the Senate to vote for this, because otherwise they may lose their position.
Well, you're taking a bold stance. You're in Congress to make a difference.
I am. I'm coming to do the job that I know needs to be done. And this is the future of the Republican Party. Everyone knows that the coalition, the Hispanic, that we're part of a coalition that put Trump into the White House. He says it himself, Brian. Mm-hmm. I won the 7 swing states, and 4 of them, the Hispanics, put me over the top. And I won the popular vote. He's the guy. That's what I'm saying. Hey, Mr. President, you have to sign this bill.
She's going to bat for the Dignity Act. Congresswoman Salazar, thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it. Great to see you in New York.
My pleasure.
And at least it warmed up for you, unlike the brutal winter that we had. Thank you very much. When we come back, Chairman Jody Arrington, you'll listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The headlines, the stories behind them, and the people who make them. Only on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Fire. Hey, welcome back. Jody Arrington's with us now, chairman of the House Budget Committee for now. But Congressman, you're not coming back, are you?
No, I'm not. And more legislators ought to see this as a temporary stint in stewardship and citizen leadership. And I'm heading back to West Texas like George Washington went back to Mount Vernon. That's the way the system, I think, ought to work.
Right. Are you frustrated?
Or? No, I just don't think we ought to make a career out of Congress. It's that simple. I want to be in the fight. I'll find a way to stay in the fight. Right. Every day I have loved this calling on my life, but it was always going to be temporary.
So where do you stand right now? The Speaker of the House having trouble getting funding for ICE, porting of DHS. You saw the deal the Senate had. You saw the way the House told the Speaker, we're not voting for this. So where do you stand right now as you go back to work?
Well, the Democrats have proven that their only posture is obstruction, and that they are completely recalcitrant in funding Homeland during a conflict where the longest shutdown ever. And the only way to govern and to protect our homeland and our fellow countrymen is to have a unilateral exercise of Republican leadership through reconciliation to fund the Department of Homeland Security. Now, what happened a couple weeks ago is the Senate sent us Homeland funded absent ICE and Border Patrol. It was unacceptable. Basically, they cut out that. We were going to sign what would have been de facto defunding ICE and Border Patrol.
But you said you were going to get it through reconciliation by June 1st.
By June 1st, we can easily get that piece done where we
well, use. You were kind of down on reconciliation, weren't you?
No. Are you kidding me? This budget chairman, I think that's our most potent legislative tool to govern and to fix all of the problems left by Biden, Kamala Harris. And there are many. We did a good work in the Big Beautiful Bill on cutting spending and waste and fraud and putting pro-growth policies to reignite this economy and many other things. But we have two more bites at the apple, Brian. So why would we waste that? Democrats wouldn't. That's why we have unified Republican leadership. There's more ways.
Explain that to me again. What do you mean by you have two more bites of the apple?
So we have two more reconciliation opportunities, and we can use one to fund Homeland in some form or fashion.
Already,
should have been funded, and we can keep putting it back on the Democrats while our country is susceptible to attacks in our ports because of our guardsmen not being funded. And let's go down the list, right? Critical infrastructure attacks. We have to be the adults in the room right now. We just have to. It's the best for our country. Forget the politics on that. That's what I say. Just like Trump has said, this isn't in his political interest to do what he's doing with Iran, but it's the right thing for our country. It's in the best interest of our children and a future without fear of an Ayatollah with nuclear weapons. So there are just sometimes you've got to man up and do what's right for the country.
So, but to do that, so what is the answer then? If reconciliation, you don't want to waste it there, and yet you don't want to sign off on what the Senate's telling you to do, what is your answer?
Well, like I mentioned, we have two bites at the apple, so we could use one reconciliation to restore funding to the critical Homeland Security operations.
Okay.
One way or the other. I prefer all of Homeland Security, not just carving it up and doing pieces of it. Just fund it. And let's do it for more than 1 year, anticipating Democrats will try to leverage and hold hostage America's Homeland Security for future funding fights. Then you have another reconciliation tool to fund our military, support our commander-in-chief, and not just today for replenishing munitions and the current operations in the conflict in Iran, but a down payment on how to be ready for future
wars. So put funding for the war in this reconciliation package.
I think you can add that and just call it a security package with Homeland funded and what would have effectively been supplemental approps for troops. We won't get support from Democrats on that. We're going to have to use the reconciliation means and an all-Republican exercise for that.
Right. But you think there'll be, besides Tom Massey doesn't vote for anything, how many can you lose? I forgot even the
You can only lose one. We have a one-vote margin. So, but we did that the first time. We actually had a one-vote margin when we passed the Big Beautiful Bill. I think right now we have the critical mass, the consensus, to do both Homeland, ICE and CBP, multiple years, and support our troops and commander-in-chief. Now, that's going to wane, the latter part, especially as we get closer to November and as this conflict continues to drag out. So let's be smart. Put them together.
When could you vote on this?
The other thing, Byron, just a quick point. Yeah. We can offset, that is, we can pay for the funding for defense with the savings from the president's war on fraud. Because we did $1.5 trillion of basically waste, fraud, and abuse in lots of entitlement programs, mainly Medicaid, SNAP, and the Affordable Care Act. That's three of 80 means-tested welfare programs that we spend $1.5 trillion on every year. Let's put the same program integrity measures in place in all of them to prevent illegals from siphoning money. That's the savings that would underwrite the defense.
Would you actually see that money? So, I mean, you save that money, you get it, or you find people, you reclaim it, you arrest them, you get it out of their account. But do you actually see the money you're saving?
You can put the money towards the Treasury, which would be basically which would actually reduce the deficit, which is a tax on our children,
right.
Or you take the savings and you put it against a national priority like defense.
Real quick, are you worried about the Senate race in Texas as we try to find out if it's going to be Ken Paxton or John Cornyn?
I can make arguments for both of these gentlemen. I know them both. Probably John Cornyn has a better chance in the general, and I think people are rightfully nervous about
Tallarico,
Paxton, and what a face off would look like there, and the risks, and there are risks, no question. So I'll just leave it at that and let the people of Texas decide.
Are you worried about the race overall?
No, Texans will not let Tallarico, a radical leftist, represent the great state of Texas. It'll never happen.
Right. Chairman Jody Arrington, you will be missed, but you're not done yet.
Thank you,
Brian.
You've
got to finish up strong. You're going to run through the tape, right?
Absolutely. Right. Thank you. God bless America.
You got it. Keep it here.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Excited to be back with you on Monday. Thanks so much for listening and being here at Midtown Manhattan, right around the mayor here, celebrating 100 days. 100 days of a socialist mayor. The one thing I just can't believe is, you know, sometimes people want to, in politics, they'll ridicule you and say, I'm for these social programs. They'll go, you're a socialist. I'll go, no, I'm not. Unless you're Bernie Sanders. And now you have a mayor saying, I'm socialist and I'm proud of it. And just saying, look how great it is to be. And the person who is there heralding his first 100 days is Bernie Sanders. And they're proud of it. It's just crazy to me. I can't get my head around it. Kevin Roberts at the bottom of the hour, the president of the Heritage Foundation. Congressman Chip Roy wants to be the next attorney general of Texas in a matter of moments. But first, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Blessed be the Lord, my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle.
Pope Leo warned that Jesus, quote, does not listen to the prayers of those who wage war.
So 60 Minutes tackling the president and the Pope. Trump versus the Pope, a clash that crashed into the news cycle Sunday. I'll explain why I predicted it.
Number two.
I was taken to the Aloft Dublin Pleasanton where he was staying. I don't remember what happened that night, but I know there was sexual contact. Because when I woke up in the morning, I could feel that there was.
Up in flames, the disaster who is Eric Swalwell, accused of horrible sex crimes, not only won't be governor, will soon likely not be a congressman. I'll have that in the other political news.
Number one.
Oh, I don't care if they come back or not. If they don't come back, I'm fine. Their military is gone. Their missiles are largely depleted. The manufacturing capability for missiles and drones is largely defeated.
Test of wills. Trump flips the script, takes the straight with a blockade just in effect now over the last few hours. What it means for the war in Iran, the next stop with talks in Pakistan, should there be one. And I'll ask that to Congressman Chip Roy out of Texas. Congressman, welcome back. Great to see you. Your thoughts about the president's move over the weekend that went into effect an hour ago.
Brian, great to be on. I hope you had a great weekend. Yeah, look, I think what the president did was flip the script, right? Iran was saying, hey, we're the ones who have control over the straits. We're the ones that are going to dictate how this goes. You guys can attack us, whatever. We're still going to be bottling up oil, and we're going to be the ones that control it. The president said, hold on just a minute. What we're going to do is we're going to demonstrate that we're going to be the ones that are going to throttle this, and we're going to make clear to the world that we're going to sort this out. And I loved what the president said. I think it was on maybe Maria yesterday morning. And when he said, look, it's going to be all or none. Like, we're going to open this up and we're going to let the world markets work. We're going to let oil flow for the betterment of the entire world. Or you're not going to get any of it. You're not going to be sitting here and picking and choosing based on whoever you want to, you know, support politically. You're going to open up the straits in full or you're not going to open it up at all. So, look, I think the president's making the right move here. This is a moment where we can reset the geopolitical landscape. What happens here has a great impact on China, a great impact on Russia. You marry that with the president's leadership in Venezuela. And now we have a new world dynamic where we've got great oil production in the United States, and we can make sure that they're no longer throttling what they're doing over there, and we'll be in a much better place.
I know it's very soon, but the conflict's been going on for over a month. Have you seen more countries come to Texas for oil and gas?
Well, yeah, that's certainly what I'm getting and updates I'm getting. Obviously, the president said that yesterday, the amount of tankers that are now moving over to the Gulf of America, coming this way to go to Louisiana, go to Texas and come to, get oil here in the United States. We're obviously trying to make sure we've got the ability to do that. It's not always easy to turn on a dime, right, and ramp up full production. You know, I talked to our guys in Midland. I was in Midland last week. They're excited about what they're trying to do to be able to get oil moving and get it producing. But, you know, if they get it producing and then it ramps back down, it gets a little tough. So we're trying to make sure they know they're going to have a steady supply going forward. But America can now do what we couldn't do 20 years ago. Thanks to the innovation and the work and the entrepreneurship of the men and women in Texas in particular, but and throughout the United States. So now we've got a much better leverage position for the president to be able to use. And this president's willing to do it in order to improve. And by the way, Brian, this is really important. People listening to this need to know the easiest political calculation for the president would be to sit soft, try to keep gas prices low, try to navigate through to win seats in November, not face radical Democrats if the House flipped to Democrats. But the president is saying what he believes is good for the long-term future of the United States, and he's looking down the field decades and centuries like China does, rather than looking at the next earnings report or the next gas report, and he believes that'll be in the long-term interest of our kids and our grandkids. That's what we need in leadership right now.
I hear you, and Congressman, a couple of things. You guys did all this in Texas and in the oil world, despite the headwinds from the green world, who were making you feel terrible, making sure that your kids did not get into the industry that made a great living in Midland, Texas for families of generations. All the pushback, the infiltration on the boards of major oil and gas companies, you withstood all that pressure, and now the fever is broken. Am I right?
Well, certainly it has been a great thing, and I want to give a lot of credit to the mid-size oil and gas operators that never flinched and kept their head down and did all the great work with the fracking revolution and all that we've been able to do over these last now 15-plus years. We've transformed the political landscape, and all of that came out of Texas, and I'm proud of that. And look, I got to tell you, one of the reasons that I'm running for attorney general is to defend that and to fight against the Green New Scam subsidies, the Green New Scam, you know, operators that are trying to enrich themselves while they pat themselves on the back and they drive their Volvos around or their, you know, Teslas around, and God bless them. I love Teslas, but you know, they want to pat themselves on the back for doing something wonderful rather than recognizing that when they do that with this subsidized environment, they kill our ability to have reliable grid and technology. And by the way, last year in the big, beautiful bill, you'll remember we had some tense moments a year ago in May where some of us had to say, oh, hold on, we're going to risk the big, beautiful bill and the tax policies in order to make sure we repeal some of those Green New Scam subsidies. We were successful. We knocked out about half of them because we held the line. The president wanted us to, by the way, and we got that done. But guess what? A PAC in California ran $1 million of ads against me in my race for attorney general, a bunch of leftists in my primary, because they're afraid of me as attorney general going after them and their Green New Scam subsidies. We in Texas are going to keep doing what we need to do to make sure our lives are better through the use of all technology.
So, Congressman, are you as concerned as some other Republicans about the Hispanic vote? You've done a great job chipping away at it. No one's done better than Trump. But in the aggression, maybe how it's portrayed or not, fairly or not, the aggression to get illegal immigrants, some in the Hispanic community say they feel targeted. No one would feel that more than people running for office in Texas. How do you feel about it?
Most of the people of Texas, of whatever walk of life, whether they're Hispanic or whether they're not, they're proud to have a president that's actually trying to secure the state of Texas and try to secure the country. You know, look, you know what Hispanics were feeling was, you know, my now good friend Alexis Nungre, whose daughter Jocelyn, you know this very well, Brian, was murdered by Tren de Aragua gang members in Houston. And she's been a great advocate for reform and change, supporting the president, working with me and other conservatives. I bring her up because there's thousands of those stories and examples. And people were sick to death. Hispanic Texans were sick to death of watching their communities getting ravaged by cartels and gang members. And they're proud the president is doing something about it. And by the way, they want us to support ICE. They want us to support Border Patrol. Now, look, do we need to be smart about what we do and how we do it? Of course. Let's see. Look what happened in Minneapolis. Tom Homan gets on the ground. Tom Homan's like, look, we're going to get this focused. We don't need all the fanfare and the bravado and all the stuff. Let's just do our job. Tom Homan did the right thing there. What is that? Prioritize and focus. I'm a former federal prosecutor, Brian. Sometimes you got to use prosecutorial discretion. Target the Somalis that are engaging in fraud. target the worst actors, target the gang members, target the people that everybody hates and wants out of our country. Do that. This is not about Hispanics. Yeah. This is about making sure we have criminals off our streets and people who are here who follow our law. Because the people who follow the law, they want that. I think that's a winning message. The president and Tom get it, and we're all trying to work together to deliver it.
Congressman Chip Roy, my guest, and he is running for attorney general. Congressman, how real is this whole, these communities have pushing for Sharia law in Texas? Huh. I don't know what's real and what's not. You live there. What are you hearing? What is the reality? Yeah.
No, that it's a really important question. And if you ask what is the number one reason I'm running for attorney general, it is to stop the march of Islam through the state of Texas into our country. It's very real. You guys are now, you know, those that are in New York understand what's happening with Mamdani. It's very concerning. Dearborn, Michigan, Minneapolis. But it's very real in Texas. Epic City has caught a lot of the national news. This compound that was going to advance Sharia law on a 400-acre compound that was going to be Muslim-centric near Plano, Texas, a suburb of Dallas. But there are other places throughout the state of Texas that have had these issues. There are 330 mosques in Texas, more mosques getting built in Texas every year than any other state in the union. And this is being funded by a vast array of probably about 500 or 600 organizations. My friend Amy Meck has reported on this a great deal with Rare. But you've got massive funding, and all this ties back to the Muslim Brotherhood memorandum from 1991, which we all have, which talks about waging jihad against the West, using the First Amendment against us to be able to put in place a massive community getting developed where Sharia law will be put in place and where they'll be advocating quietly at first, loudly second, and then violently third to be able to transform and take over the West. It is a plan. They are executing it. They've done it in Western Europe. They want to do it in the United States. They realize Texas is the crown jewel. So I'm going to fight it. I'm going to stop it. As Attorney General, I will open up the books of these organizations, cut the funding off where they're tied to CARE and the Muslim Brotherhood. I introduced legislation last week to go after CARE and its terrorist ties. I've tried to take away their tax status in legislation. I introduced legislation to vet people for Sharia law. I introduced legislation to pause immigration. We need to be on offense, not defense, on this issue.
I mean, there's so many foreign entities fueling a lot of the unrest in our city streets, whether they're pro-Iran protests or anti-Trump protests. It's bad enough when it comes from the inside, but when it's being financed on the outside, that is a national security threat. So I had Congresswoman Salazar in from Florida. As you know, she's pushing the Dignity Act that says after 5 years, you don't get citizenship, and just it's many pages, but you don't get citizenship, but you can stay if you have a background check and there's certain criteria. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I'm strongly opposed to it. I mean, look, I get along with Maria fine, and we work together in Congress, but I just strongly disagree with her position and the 20 or so Republicans that are co-sponsoring it. There is, in fact, an amnesty in this bill. It is without question. There is, in fact, a pullback on prosecutions and carrying out what we need to do to remove people from the United States, giving people the blanket ability to stay, even those who have been removed, being able to come back. There are a lot of things in here that will undermine our ability to carry out enforcement. And frankly, anything that has amnesty in it is dead on arrival.
Can I ask you this? So if you must know a lot of farmers, people in the rural community, meatpackers, that have people on their rolls for 15, 20 years, and they must tell you, I have nobody to replace them if I lose these people. Are you for something that says you've been here 10 years, you'll never get citizenship? Can't use social services? If it doesn't lead to citizenship, is that amnesty? If you get to stay, do you consider that amnesty?
Yeah, Brian, this is something, as you know, we've been having this debate for, 25 years now, dating back to the Bush years, going all the way through, you'll remember, 2012,
but the only thing different is you seal the border. The only thing different is you seal the border this time.
Right, but here's the thing. Remember, we were failing at this. And finally, in 2018, we Goodlatte 1, Goodlatte 2, I know that's in the weeds, but, we had the big fight. Didn't get anywhere. Finally, Republicans in 2023, we united, we passed H.R. 2, we backed up President Trump. President Trump comes in, and we're securing the border, and we're enforcing the law. We have not codified securing the border. We have not codified fixing asylum and parole and catch and release, which has been destroying our border and our country for years. And we have not reformed legal immigration, which is badly broken. If we want to have a conversation about what we're doing, it starts there. And look, let's be clear. I've got a lot of people, farmers, oil and gas, hospitality, restaurants, I hear from them every day about their concerns about labor. We got to make sure Americans are working first. We got to make sure the border is secure. We got to make sure we have a legal system that is not broken and tilted towards H-1Bs that are funneling a bunch of people into fake houses in Dallas, all very real, abusive, chain migration, diversity visas that are pumping people into our country. 5 million people have been imported into the United States from majority Muslim countries since 9/11. You stop that stuff, then come talk to me about status. We need everybody in the boat, farmers, hospitality, oil and gas, everybody. Everybody get in. Let's figure out how to fix this. Let's be serious
all
about
once,
sovereignty
yeah.
and security.
All
and then we'll talk about right. what you want to do about status. But at the end of the day, anyone who's here is illegally. They've broken the law and they need to be removed. And I understand how difficult that is, but that's our law. And so we need to follow the law and then get it fixed.
Understood. You know what's so great about you and how why you'll be missed is that you fight for everything. Everybody knows where you stand for. But ultimately, you want to get something done. The
yes.
Republicans want to get done. You want to get stuff done. So if you sit there in a think tank attitude, ideological, what's the point? Then teach a class at a college and excel. But when you're in Congress, you get it. This is what I stand for. Now tell me what's possible. I think more
By
people
the way,
need that attitude.
Well, thank you, Brian. And same thing as Attorney General. You got to figure out which suits to file. You got to figure out how to work
yeah.
with other states to get to win the right suits. We need to set up a lot of important fights. My opponent, for example, has been hitting me as, quote, you're going to laugh at this, that Chip Roy is pro-amnesty because I said in East Texas at a conservative gathering, I said, guys, we need to prioritize who we remove. We need to focus on the Somalis, focus on those here who are violent, and do it in that way in an orderly fashion. Basically, alongside what Tom Homan was saying, I never said that if you came here illegally, you get to stay. I'm just saying prioritize it, but you do need to be thoughtful and figure out how to make this all work. And now he's like, oh, you're pro amnesty. And but this is somebody who's going to try to make political hits. I just want to figure out how to win for America. We need a secure border, secure country, a sovereign nation. We need to have a workforce that works, starting with Americans first. The president is trying to do that.
Right.
I'm trying to work with the president to deliver that in a complex environment.
Yeah, and keep our country solvent at the same
yep.
time. Congressman, thanks so much. Always great to talk to you.
Thanks, Brian. God bless. Hope you had a great weekend.
You too. Back in a moment.
Big guests, bold opinions, better information. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Since the pandemic, grocery prices have gone up and they haven't come back down. We feel it every single time we go to the store. Between 2013 and 2023, grocery prices increased in New York City by nearly 66%, significantly higher than the national average. During our campaign, we promised New Yorkers that we would create a network of 5 city-owned grocery stores, one in each borough. Today, we make good on that promise.
You're cheering a grocery store like the Yankees just won the pennant and you're in the Canyon of Heroes. This is a grocery store that'll be maybe, in theory, a little bit cheaper on certain products, but it's going to cost $30 million and it's coming from you. Taxpayer dollars. And if you're saying, well, I'm not at the point where you're taxing my income. Well, they're taxing everything else you do in New York City so that you are paying into this. So they have one in East Harlem for $30 million. And he acts like this is cutting edge when we've already seen the pilot programs not work in places like Kansas City. So the free buses aren't there. He's got I think 3K program paid for by the state. But almost everything he's done, and I know it's early, in fairness to him, has not worked, but he celebrated 100 days. This guy is a publicity machine. He gets that. He's got the smile. But the fact is that he embraces socialism, and he says it's as a badge of honor to straighten out what's left of what capitalism screwed up is crazy. My worry is in 5-10 years, it won't seem so unusual. That's actually my worry, unless Democrats stand up and push back in their own party.
Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Holy Father, can I ask you what your hopes are for the Middle East?
I'm praying for peace. I hope that ceasefire would be the most effective way to work together, to find peace for all parties, to respect all parties, and to come to a solution, which is too many years in creating problems for everyone. So work for peace.
Yeah, thank you, Pope. I had no idea. That's right. The president gets up every day and says, let's blow things up. It would be great if he praised the president when he had, settled big and small wars, including what happened in Gaza, getting the hostages out. Maybe that might be a good balance. If you want to be critical and say war of choice, okay. If you think the choice was let them get a nuclear weapon and then they attack us and we hit back, then the Pope is saying, I'm okay with that. Good luck. Maybe they're not going to aim for the Vatican, but clearly they can aim for Italy. Kevin Roberts joins us now, Heritage Foundation President, Dr. Kevin Roberts. Kevin, welcome back. Your thoughts about the Pope going out of his way to go at Trump?
Well, you know that I'm a serious Roman Catholic and a fierce supporter of President Trump. And the first thing I'll say is, where would we be here on the cusp of America's golden age without President Trump? And I would encourage the Holy Father, whom I also respect, Brian, to be clear, to spend some time learning some things, as my former colleague and friend Tom Homan has suggested as a fellow Catholic. I think that would go a long way. You know, the real model here, to cut to the chase, is the friendship that President Reagan and John Paul II struck. And it wasn't because right off the bat they saw things eye to eye. It's because they spent time together. But the upshot, to get to your point, is that the Holy Father needs to be spending time cultivating souls and recognizing that President Trump has been far more beneficial to what we believe than any president in modern memory. I have to say, however, to my friend President Trump, I would have said differently than what he said in Truth Social, and I would not have posted that picture. I think it's really important for the president to understand that there are better ways of conveying that criticism.
Couple of things. He said the Pope is weak, came after him. Maybe you probably wouldn't have said that. But I also think it's good to go back in time and find out when is the Pope. He's against war. He says you cannot fight and incite religion as a reason for war. Now, I don't know what specifically he's talking about, but I'm not a biblical scholar, but isn't the Bible just full of examples of just wars and just when it's okay to fight? I believe that if the Battle of the Bulge happens, I would think that a Pope would be praying for America to prevail over Nazi Germany. And I would have preferred maybe in World War II, historically, another Pope would have stood up and spoke out against fascism and Nazism. But when they were pretty much neutral during that time. You might be a little too embarrassed to now go to bat for a war of choice with Iran.
Well, in the present day, what's odd about the Holy Father's comment about basically no war being just is that it's really different from 1,000 years of church teaching. It's from St. Thomas Aquinas that we get just war theory. And obviously, if you apply the Pope's logic, there would be no war that would be just. And in this case, I happen to think that it's just. I think the president's prosecution of the war has not only been effective, but also very importantly, neither the president nor any single one of our member of the military has done anything that would violate just war theory. And the insinuation that that has happened, I think, probably set off the president. Let me introduce one other important thing here, too. If I'm the president, Brian, and I'm sitting last night and I'm watching those three goofball liberal cardinals be given a platform by 60 minutes, I get really frustrated. And what I want to encourage the president with is that there are scores of people joining the Roman Catholic Church in spite of those three. I just want to encourage him to foster, as I would the Holy Father, a better relationship with another world leader. I actually think we'll achieve more world peace if that happens.
You mean if he reached out to the Pope and said, let's make amends? I think the Pope's going to have his way not to be to distance himself from the president. Have you picked that up?
No, although I don't know Pope Leo personally, I know the president better. Knowing the president, he's willing to have a meeting anytime, anywhere with anyone. It's one of the reasons he's so effective. I can't imagine that the Holy Father would ignore that. I think that's the real opportunity ahead. And both men will learn something from each other. In the Pope's case, obviously some gaps of knowledge he has about how America so justly is prosecuting this war. And the president can learn that there, might be a little bit better ways of making some constructive criticism.
Yeah, I'm not for that picture either. I'm just seeing it now. I did not have a chance to see that picture. Here's an example of the knucklehead cardinals. Cut 40.
Would you like to see this first American pope be more outspoken on issues that he disagrees with?
He's the pastor of the world. He's not a pundit. So the distinction is he's not going to pronounce on everything, but he's going to pronounce on what's important.
Iran has been the chief exporter of terror. Is there no scenario in which preventing that can be a just war?
It's an abominable regime, and it should be removed. But this is a war of choice that we went to, and I think it's embedded in a wider moment in the United States that's worrying, which is this. We're seeing before us the possibility of war after war after war.
Is that what you're talking about?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. President Trump has done more to bring peace to the world in his first term and his second term than anyone. But let me also say, if I may, Brian, a topic you and I have discussed over the years, those three cardinals in particular are god-awful on immigration. They make all kinds of excuses for at least 12 million illegal aliens to come into this country, undermining our nation state, which is just as important to church teaching as it is to be friendly to the poor and to the indigent. And it's really important for non-Catholic friends, for that matter, Catholic friends who saw that and think that they represent lay Catholics, to understand they absolutely don't. The thousands of people joining the Roman Catholic Church are doing so in spite of the feckless lack of courage in the leadership of those three cardinals.
I want to talk about something that is not politically advantageous for the president to do, but I believe 100% right to do, and anything but easy. And that is to take on the Iranian threat. Every day that we talk about foreign policy, with every administration, with every debate stage, when you talk about foreign policy, Iran comes up. How are you going to handle it? What are you going to negotiate? Are they the number one threat? So the president took it on, and he's taking it on. I'm astounded, Kevin, and maybe I shouldn't be, about the amount of people who are now heralding the JCPOA as something that we never should have torn up. There was this great piece of work that Barack Obama, the genius, came up with and that Donald Trump walked away from, and that's why they're about to get a bomb. Are you amazed how people are trying to rewrite history in real time?
I am. I mean, it's astonishing, even for those of us who have the burden of working inside Washington, D.C., to see that. They've also forgotten 47 years of sustained direct threats to the United States as an entity and to American individuals. So to make the claim that somehow there isn't some direct immediate threat to the United States is to forget that as well. Now, I will also say, and the president deserves credit for this too, that those of us who are concerned about the endless series of forever wars are really sort of approving of this Iran conflict, because the president has conducted it in a way that's time limited. It's been massive in its excellent or successful prosecution of the war. But the president has repeatedly said, including with Maria Bartiromo yesterday, that this will be time limited. I think it's really important for people, Brian, especially those of us on the right, who want to make sure that we've learned the lessons of the past of staying in places like Iraq and Afghanistan too long. As long as the president continues to prosecute this war well, focuses on the strategic objectives he laid out, I think this will end up being a popular conflict.
So the blockade on the Strait is an absolute flipping of the script. And then it's going to lead to, after they demine the Strait, to escorts. And what it does is take whatever power that they had and leverage that they had of the Strait, and it's going to turn it over to us. I love this move. The more military people I talk to are getting it. Your thoughts about this, Kevin, because it's not without risk.
No, it is. It's not without risk, but kudos to the president for being willing to take that calculated risk. As my colleague, Dr. Victoria Coates, said yesterday, this is typical Trump. This is Trump flipping the script. And, you know, I tend to look at these things through the lens as a historian, Brian. I can't think of a president in the last 120 years other than Ronald Reagan or Teddy Roosevelt who's a better geopolitical strategist. But also, Trump is a master tactician. This is going to bring a conclusion to this war, but it's also going to put huge, huge pressure on China, a country obviously over which the United States is gaining leverage. So hats off to the president for being very innovative and creative, very typical Trump move here. And thus far, people in D.C., unfortunately, some people in the media, aren't appreciating the wisdom and the courage of it.
I want you to hear what the president said yesterday and why he used the terms are going to wipe out your civilization a week ago. Cut two.
I'm fine with it. That statement brought them to the table, with the exception of the one thing, which I believe that they're going to give up on. I believe they're going to give up on that pretty soon, to be honest, because it's not going to work. We actually thought we had them, and then all of a sudden they said, no, we want.
And he's talking about the uranium and giving up that. And we said civilization. And I thought Michael Smirkanish, believe it or not, on CNN said over the weekend what we've been saying. He's like, do you understand he's not talking to you? He's talking to radical extremists who has a philosophy and a policy chant death to America. So what are they trying to say about America's future? They like death. That's really all of Western Europe. So the president says, if I'm going to talk to people like that, this is what's going to get their attention. And it got their attention.
That's right. Trump's a master strategist. He's the master of the usage of hyperbole. We have to remind ourselves in those moments where we say, well, that's strong language to say the least. We're not the audience. The audience in that case, as you say, are not just these radical Islamists, but people who are probably the most evil purveyors of terrorism and terrible acts in the world. The president is right to ratchet up the stakes for them. Look, I wish we didn't have to be in Iran, but we do. And I'm so grateful that the president is going about this the way that he is. We're optimistic at Heritage that not only that this will be successful, but that it will be time limited. And we're encouraging the president, obviously, to bring it to a conclusion as soon as possible so that he can report back to the American people on its success and also be focused on the economy on which the midterms will hinge.
What do you say to people who go, well, he promised no more foreign wars and he's doing it anyway. He broke his promise.
Two things. Number one, I and Heritage have led the way in D.C. towards a more restrainer foreign policy. You and I have talked about that. President Trump has embodied that, and therefore he's earned the trust, the benefit of the doubt on this. And the second thing is, sometimes reality hits you right in the face. And what Trump realizes is that he can prosecute this war successfully over a period of weeks and it not be a forever war, completely fulfill that criteria. I think that's what's going to happen, and I think by Labor Day, we're going to look back on this as a success, and the president will be on the campaign trail talking about a real boon to the economy.
And here's two ways in which I disagree with the president. I'm all for Ukraine. I think they're the good guys in this. Their innovation with drones are going to be a real benefit to us, and I would get them with some of their experts on our ships because we might sadly need them shortly. And number two is I'm glad Viktor Orban lost. I love what he did on immigration. It was smart. But in terms of giving his economy over to China and kissing up to Russia, I could do without that.
Yeah, I definitely don't like the Russia part between Orban and Putin. In fact, I talked to him face to face in a conference here at Heritage about that. And just as evidence that great friends can have differences of opinion, I disagree with you on both of those points. I think that, well, of course, Ukraine's the good guy and we want them to win. The thing that Trump has brought to the table is that that's more of Europe's war than it is the United States war. The United States, evidenced by the feckless lack of courage in our supposed NATO allies, can't even count on most of them when we're conducting this war in Iran. So it's really important for the United States to have allies in Europe that actually take on Russia. All of that to say, on Mr. Orban, it's proof that in a democratic republic, when you've been in power for 16 years, even the most popular populist can fall out of favor. It's yet another endorsement of term limits here for our presidents at two terms.
Yeah, even though Trump would like to stretch that just a little bit, I know he would.
Fair.
By the way, this just in. Donald Trump has deleted the post depicting himself as Jesus amid heavy MAGA backlash. So maybe he heard you, Kevin.
I'm not surprised by that. I tell people, although there are many people who know the president better personally than I do, I know him well enough to know he is a good man. And yes, he speaks with hyperbole. But the great thing about President Trump is that he listens, evidenced by taking that picture.
All right. We started with one picture. We ended with a deleted one. Dr. Kevin Roberts of Heritage. Always great to talk to you. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, sir. Take care.
You got it. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It was in 2019. I was, again, driving him to an event. This was my job. And you were 21 years old. And I was 21 years old. We see some sort of parking lot. And he says to pull over. And instructs me to give him oral sex. And I started to. Again, I felt incredibly uncomfortable. And I stopped. And I said to him, this feels really uncomfortable. And anyone could see us right now. And he said to me, you're right. It's probably not good for a congressman to be caught with his pants down.
So that is one of the accusers, obviously, of Eric Swalwell. He's got his staff resigned. The billionaire, which evidently was putting him up, has gone, kicked him out. So he is now trying to hang on to his job as a congressman. Most likely is not going to happen. He was the one of the front runners along with Steve Hilton to make the finals and get through the jungle primary. He had every single power broker outside Gavin Newsom in his corner. Not anymore. Here's more from that former staffer.
I decided to ask him to meet me for a drink. And I did this because I was so far removed from what had happened in 2019. I felt safe because I was established. I had a partner. I felt more secure that I could have a strictly professional relationship with this person. After that bar closed, we went to another. I went to the bathroom and I don't remember anything after that.
You don't remember anything?
I remember the next day. I can see flashes of that evening, of him on top of me, me pushing him off, him grabbing me. It was a lot more aggressive. It was aggressive.
Did you say no?
Yes, I said no. I said, in my flash that I can recall, I was pushing him off of me saying no.
And what did he do?
He didn't stop.
He didn't stop.
So that is some of the accusations going at the congressman, who came out with an apology right after that and said, but he says everything's not true, but apologized to his family with mistakes in judgment. We've seen the same pattern before. Bottom line is, if you knew you had this in your background, why would you run? Number two is, people have brought up, and he's brought up, what about the timing? It's just it's very close to a primary, and all of a sudden, all these stories come out. Doesn't mean they're not true, and nobody's standing by him now, it doesn't seem. Cut 28.
If any of these allegations are true, he should no longer be a candidate, at least candidate for governor.
What he did is sick and disgusting. There need to be consequences to that. And I have said that not only does he need to step aside, but there needs to be House ethics investigation and law enforcement investigation.
This is clearly a pattern. I've already called for Congressman Swalwell to drop out of the gubernatorial race. And I think we have to hold everybody accountable.
All those with Democratic voices. So there you go. It looks like he's going to be gone. And then it was brought up, what about Congressman Gonzalez, who also had some rumor with a staffer who burned herself alive after their relationship, somehow related? Cut 33.
If that vote comes to the floor, I will be voting yes on both measures. These allegations are despicable, and they demean the integrity of Congress. These things are just completely unacceptable. As far as I'm concerned, both gentlemen need to go home.
All right, we'll see what happens. By the way, go to BrianKilmeade.com. I want to meet you in person. Red Bank, New Jersey, October 16th. Westbury, New York, October 17th. Clearwater, Florida, November 7th. Jacksonville, Florida, November 8th.